You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And welcome to an Anfield Index special, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very excited for this one because some of us may or may not like the international break, but things at Liverpool, especially off the field, the chat continues, doesn't it? And for this one, we're going to be talking about Ruben Amorim, the Portuguese coach, who it's a name that almost in the best way won't go away. His name keeps coming up in articles. We keep being linked with him. There's a lot of talk around this one. So I'm absolutely ecstatic, I genuinely am, to be joined by Portugal creator, author of the 13th chapter, author of A Journey Through Portuguese Football, and World Soccer Mag correspondent, Tom Kunder. Tom, how are we?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'm always pleased to talk about Ruben Amorim as well, because he's a little bit of a phenomenon. And it's going to be interesting to see if his career continues how it started. I think we could be in for, you know, another huge Portuguese coach in world football in the next few years.
Yeah, and it is an illustrious history he could be following into as well. So, Tom, I mean, let's get right into it. He is continuously, I'd say, it is the hot name linked to the Liverpool job at the moment. I suppose in the simplest terms, what should Liverpool fans know about Ruben Amorim?
Well, he's just completely transformed Sporting. Okay, so when he went to Sporting, they're a club who are obviously one of the big three clubs in Portugal, yep, but they've been really lagging further and further behind Porto and Benfica, so far behind that some people were kind of half joking and half seriously saying that you shouldn't really call it the big three in Portugal anymore. You should just call it the big two, because, for example, before Amorim came to Sporting in the 40 years previously, Sporting had only won the title twice. And, all the other titles, apart from one Spurs each to win it, apart from that, all the other titles were shared between Porto and Benfica. So that was the context he came into Sporting. They were in a real mess as well. They'd had about three or four coaches in the previous year or two. And he just completely transformed almost from the get-go. He actually came just before COVID hit. I think he had one game, then the COVID crisis kind of, wow, hit all around Europe. So the league season was interrupted, and then it came back with no fans. And he did something very intelligent right from the start. So Sporting, really no money compared to the other two clubs I was talking about. Just threw in a load of youngsters, literally. Sporting would go out with, like, I think maybe Sebastian Coates, the coach, who, of course, you'll know about, Liverpool fans, the captain. He was the only kind of elder statesman. Every other player was like 22 years old or younger. And he did that to kind of see, you know, which players he could rely on for the following season. About four or five of those young players really made their mark, and they were key players in the following season, where he just really stunned Portuguese football by winning the league. And like I said, so that had been 19 years since Sporting had last won the league. And he won it deservedly, playing just really, really intelligent football. And I think, I suppose, I'd say the chief characteristic of Amorim is something which I think he shares with your esteemed manager, of course, Jurgen Klopp, is he really manages to get to kind of create a really good group atmosphere, a really good kind of feeling of togetherness. Everyone, there was a kind of saying which came into being in that title-winning season was on the Vium Vitalis, which means where one goes, everyone goes. So, you know, the whole club, it was all the players, all the squad really got together, because it was the only way they were going to be perfectly honest, better squads of players than Sporting had at that time. But they, you know, really got together, this real kind of spirit of togetherness, fighting right until the last minute. They scored. They won something like 20, 25 points that season for goals in the last 10 minutes, which kind of shows the, you know, kind of spirit. And it's just gone from strength to strength. And, you know, people thought, wow, this is amazing. Of course, Benfica especially and Porto fans said, well, you know, this season was a strange season. There was no fans. It was COVID. Can't really, this almost doesn't count. But to be honest, he has continued and he's done very good, very close to winning the title again the following season. Last season, not so good, but this season, absolutely brilliant again. No doubt about it. Sporting are the strongest side in Portugal this season. Got a very good chance of winning the title, top of the league at the moment. Only a point ahead of Benfica, but they have a game in hand. Wow. So things are looking quite good. So yeah, he's just really almost a bit of a miracle worker. And this is even before talking about what he did at Braga to get him the job in the first place, which was he was just there for a very short space of time. I think about 2 or 3 months in that time. He beat Sporting twice. He beat Porto twice. He beat Benfica. He won the League Cup. Just basically did, you know, better than anyone could ever hope for a club outside a big three in Portugal. So that persuaded Sporting straight away to activate his release clause, which was 10 million, which was a big deal. As you can imagine, that's quite a big deal anyway for a manager, but in Portugal, that's a huge amount. And the reason Sporting did that is because he spent most of his playing career at Benfica, and so they were kind of what the chairman was worried that, okay, this is a great manager. If we don't get him now, Benfica are going to come in for him. And it proved to be money wisely spent. So, yeah, that's just the basics, just to kind of try and give you an illustration of the impact he's had. I'd go as far as to say he's kind of transformed Portuguese football these last 4 years. You know, it's made Sporting relevant again, and at this moment in time, it's made them the best team in the country.
Yeah, and I love that, where one goes, everyone goes. Like you said, there's almost the echoes with Jurgen Klopp, that symmetry there as well. Mm. I mean, you did allude to it. So they're going well then this season. I think you said they're a point ahead, but a game in hand still as well.
Yeah.
And the Portuguese league is getting towards the sort of the business end of the season, like it is in the Premier League as well. And maybe this is a difficult question to answer, to be fair, Tom. Would you say they are favourites for the league right now?
Yeah, normally that would be a difficult question to answer. And I must admit, I have to nail my colours to the mask here. I'm a Sporting fan as well. So that, sometimes we're a little bit reticent to go down that road, because we're just worried that things would go tits up, as it were. But, you know, everyone in Portugal, all the pundits, everyone admits that Sporting are just playing the best football without a doubt this season. And they're actually a bit unlucky not to be further ahead. You know, Benfica, with all due respect, they're kind of grinding out results. Well, I suppose you can say fair play to them because they're not really playing that well, but they're getting the results. And I think even today, most Sporting fans would say, certainly in terms of the squad, maybe not in terms of the team, but in terms of the squad, Benfica probably got a stronger squad than Sporting, certainly a deeper one. So certainly, I think it's still very much 50-50. I think Sporting just have the slight advantage, maybe also the fact they went out of Europe recently and Benfica are still in Europe. I think that could play to Sporting's advantage. But anyway, if you're interested in the Portuguese league or any of your listeners are, I suggest keeping track of it because the next 2 weeks is going to really be the decisive time. There's a Sporting against Benfica league game on the 6th of April, and that's really going to be a massive Lisbon derby, and that could well, you know, be decisive. If Sporting win that, I'd say they're really in a very strong position to win the league.
Yeah, no doubts about it. Really is it feels like a huge game. And I know you alluded to this earlier, that Sporting are seen as playing the best football. How would you describe Amorim's sort of style or how he sets his team up?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because he always uses the same formation, always, ever since he's been at Sporting, right from day one, which is 3-4-3, which you can kind of look at that system in two ways, can't you? Some people say it's a defensive system because, of course, when you're defending, normally the wing-backs drop back and you're basically playing a five-man defence. To be fair, that first season, that was the secret of Sporting success. They had a watertight defence. They really conceded very few goals. They won loads of games just by the odd goal. I mentioned earlier, they won loads of games just scoring goals in the last few minutes.
Yeah.
And so that was really the basis of that team. So you could say that was built on defence, which obviously wouldn't be kind of the modus operandi, which a club like Liverpool would be looking at. But using exactly the same system, 3-4-3, he's kind of modified it over the years and has tweaked it. And this season, Sporting are just playing unbelievably attacking football. They're breaking all sorts of records. They've scored more goals this season than any Sporting side since the 1960s. 1961, they've scored more goals this season in all competitions than any Portuguese side, period, this century. They're just an absolute goal machine. And so, you know, it depends how that system is utilised. Obviously, the wing-backs this time round, they're really attacking wing-backs, both of them. And so that just gives them, you know, an extra dimension. But Sporting are so strong this season, really, in all, you could say, all three corridors on both wings and also through the middle. Goals coming from all over the place, all players. And I think one big reason why, Sporting are just playing such good football and so attacking this season is because a lot of these players have been there since Amorim has been there, you know, 4 years. That might sound obvious, but in Portugal, there's such a big turnover of players. It's actually quite unusual, especially at the big clubs. If you look at a four-year period, it's quite common where there'd just be one or two players who were there from 4 years previously. But in this Sporting squad, there's maybe six or seven players in the squad, six, seven, eight players in the team, three or four players. And so they're obviously really used to the system and it's finally chewed that system. So again, it's interesting. They always play the same way. Amorim always sets it the same way. So some people last season, when it was a slightly less successful season, some people said this is too predictable. You know, it's making it too easy for the opposition. But I actually look at it a different way. I think it's every player knows exactly what they have to do. You know, Sporting have an injury, Sporting have a suspension. Someone comes in, they know exactly where to go, you know, their positioning, what their job is, and that just makes it such a smoothly running machine that it's really almost it's impossible to counter, as it has been this season. So I suppose that's a long-winded way of saying his formation is 3-4-3, but you've got to be careful if you're saying that's defensive or attacking. I think again, he's got a really good holistic approach. It's a very balanced side. this season. Well, this season is just strong defense, strong midfield, strong attack, really balanced. And if he can manage to implement that at a club with resources of a club like Liverpool, sometimes it's quite scary to think what he could achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that was the one thing I did want to ask you about, Tom, because doing a bit of research and looking at his history, as you mentioned, Portuguese football's had that model of even the big clubs would bring players in, but a high turnover, like you said, usually sell for a premium, as it were, no doubts about it at all. So with Amorim, do you think that does work in his favour potentially for a move to Liverpool? He's used to working in that sporting director structure that if you make a star, you could sell a star, so to speak, as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, but he'd absolutely love it. Any Portuguese coach who went to an English club would love it because they have this big problem. Like I said, even the big clubs, I'd say especially the big clubs, because they're obviously in the shop window because they're playing European competition. Porto, Benfica, Sporting, it's an absolute given that at the end of the season, they're going to have to sell their best player, maybe even their best two players. And, it's just it's almost a matter of rebuilding every season. And so he's absolutely used to that. Talking about the sporting director, yes, that's the model, which is at Sporting. He has a very good relationship with Hugo Viana. I don't know if that's a name you might ring a bell. He used to play for Newcastle United in the past. Yeah. He also came from Sporting. He's the sporting director. And they've done a fantastic job, really incredible success rate at Sporting. Of course, I'm not sure that you can really compare that because just the way that the kind of, the Portuguese football food chain is, Sporting have to try and pick up bargains, have to try and look for players who aren't stars already because they haven't got the money to, to bid for the best players. And obviously at Liverpool, that's a different situation. But one thing which has really impressed people, I think, about the whole setup at Sporting is they've been very good at getting players which fit their system, absolutely fit their system. Maybe not the best players. Some players they've brought in, have kind of raised eyebrows. People really haven't known too much about them. But they've really fitted into his system superbly, and he manages to mould them. Amorim manages to mould them to play exactly, into this model. And, it's worked perfectly. So, I don't think that would be a problem at all working with a sporting director. That's what he's used to. So, I can't see that being a problem at all.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, it does seem to be when you look at his CV that way. I mean, Gyökeres, you look at the striker from Coventry, almost a non-fashionable one, but how many goals and assists, to be fair, goal contributions that he's making this season. Do you think that is the strongest element of his CV, player development, the way he does almost take players, maybe we're unheralded a bit and take them up a level, or would you say it's more the trophy, that continuation? What would you put down as his strongest element for his CV?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. You can't really, I don't think you can really say one's stronger than the other because they're both absolutely vital. Like I was mentioning, Sporting were really almost out of the running when it came to winning the trophy, certainly when it came to winning the league. They were almost really a non-starter. And he's made them, like I say, without that, the strongest side in Portugal at this moment. And, he's made them competitive these last 4 years. So you can't really underestimate how difficult that is to do, and he's done it.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. Some of the improvements you see, I think it's always the sign of a great manager, how much they get out of individual players. And he seems to get the best out of every player. And some of them have improved incredibly, really. I mean, some of them we all know about because they ended up in England. Yeah. Of course, João Palhinha. Now, he's one who was really a mainstay. He was a Sporting youth product, but he was maybe 25, 26 when Amorim took over, maybe 24, 25. So, he wasn't a youngster. He'd been around for a while, but he'd never really been able to play at the top of his game. And he just improved him, and he's turned into this absolute, monster in midfield that just absolutely sweeps up everything in front of the defence. And, of course, ended up moving to England. There's another player who actually came in as a replacement for him, who went to PSG, the Uruguayan, his name escapes me at the moment, Uruguayan midfield player, Ugarte, Manuel Ugarte, who Sporting bought for, I think, about 10 million or 15 million, maybe with add-ons, from a kind of mid-table club, Famalicão in Portugal. And again, he was a good player. Obviously, that's quite big money for Portuguese transfer.
Yeah.
But he just improved incredibly, just got better and better, became a full international for Uruguay, ended up being sold to PSG for 50 million or something, 40, 50 million.
Wow.
A huge. And that was just after a couple of seasons at Sporting. So that, kind of gives you an illustration of. Yeah, his abilities is interesting. Also, those central midfield players, both of those are central midfield. And there's another one who we bought from Lecce. We're talking about, these kind of slightly unfashionable transfers.
Yeah.
The Italian club Lecce bought Morten Hulmand, who's a Danish central midfielder. And I tell you, basically, Dave, he's on the same trajectory. He's been absolutely outstanding this season. He actually was quite expensive by Sporting standards. I think he was about 17 million euros. But there's no doubt in my mind that he will be sold again for 40 or more in the next season or two. So, basically, and you've also got other examples like Nuno Mendes, the left back, who was one of those players I mentioned right at the start who Amorim threw in that kind of last couple of months of his very first season. And, absolutely incredible player. I suppose, to be fair, I think that's as much just his natural talent as Amorim managing to get the most out of it. And he, is one of the best left-backs in the world, without a doubt. Now he plays for PSG. Unfortunately, he's been a bit, his career's been a little bit blighted by injury, but he seems to be back now. But, and Pedro Porro, another example, of course, was at Man City, just didn't get a look in, was really not, his career was not going anywhere, came to Sporting, and there were a lot of question marks, especially about his defending when he first came to Sporting, but Amorim just worked with him, just got better and better and better, ended up getting sold to Spurs for 40 million, so there's no end of examples of, how he's managed to do that. Definitely, there's two facets to his game, to his coaching ability. Of course, it's interesting to know how these kind of abilities would be useful or even needed at a club like Liverpool, because of course in Sporting it's absolutely vital, because you're not working with the finished article, you're trying to make the finished article, whereas at Liverpool, most of those players are the finished article. But even so, I think he could definitely, and of course now with Liverpool recently, we've all seen a lot of young players coming into the team. So, I think he could be really good at working with them.
Yeah, very much focused at Liverpool at the moment, that youth development. And the names, like you said, that CV's got, there's some names on there. I mean, the two I did want to ask you about, two players, and You can correct me if I get pronunciations wrong, but I think the two centre-backs, Diamande, Inácio, they're continuously linked, I'd say, most summers with Liverpool. Do you think they are two that could make a step up to the Premier League or to that level?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. They're slightly different propositions, I'd say. Inácio, again, he was another one of those young players I mentioned, got thrown in 2021. And he was just, I think, 19 at the time, maybe a teenager. And right from the start, he was fantastic, you know, really good player. Really played most of the games in that title-winning season. He's a different kind of centre-back. They're very these two players are very different players. Inácio is left-footed, kind of cultured centre-back, really good at playing out from the back, fantastic passer. He could almost be like a midfield, you know, those kind of deep-lying midfielders who play a kind of quarterback role with his fantastic passing out to the wings, you know, long distance, short distance. Really good, very good in the air, quite a big goal threat as well. I think he's got 15 or 16 career goals already, you know, and he's only been playing 3 or 4 years and really young. He's still only 22. So, he's a really class act, I think, Inácio. Yeah, and there's no doubt. It's already last season and the last couple of seasons he's been linked as kind of, you know, one of the obvious players who would certainly be stepping up to one of the most prestigious leagues in the next few years. He's also a full Portuguese international now. And, you know, if he has a good European Championships, he could do well. So I think that is one. Diamande is another one. Yeah, so they're very different kind of players. So Inácio, even kind of physically, Inácio, in some ways, it doesn't look like a centre-back because he's not tremendously, you know, big physically. He's just got fantastic. He is really good in the air, but it's more to do with timing and, you know, and positioning that he's become such a good centre-back. But Diamande is just a monster of a man, of a player. Really big physically, and it's been absolutely quite amazing. I'd say that he was probably Sporting's best player in terms of scouting. They got him from the lower leagues, small club called Mafra, and he's just been an absolute revelation. Almost came straight to the side, and I think the thing which has really impressed people about him is his composure. He's again a really good passer, and he doesn't really seem to get flustered even in the big games. But he's different to Inácio because, you know, he hasn't got the passing range of Inácio, but he's he can fit in very well. But he's just, I think his biggest asset is just his physicality. You know, he's just really strong, really good in the air, really good at anticipating any kind of danger, and just a bit of a beast, really. He's, really, really difficult to get past. A little bit to start with, he was a little bit rash, I would say. Picked up a few, I think he's got a couple of red cards. And, that's one thing which he's had to work on, but he has improved on that. You know, his disciplinary record has got better. Also, I think his physicality works a little bit against him in that sense. There was, I know, one or two of the red cards were quite controversial because, referees seemed a little bit overwilling to pull their cards out when it came down to him. But he's definitely one. I think possibly, it pains me a little bit to say it because Inácio is like a hometown boy, is coming from but I'd say Diamande has probably got a higher ceiling and is probably, I'd say if one of these is really to turn into a world star, one of the big clubs, I think it would be Diamande. He's just got such, a good football brain and composure, but it's just his physicality sets him out from everyone else.
Yeah, they are two names that are repeatedly linked to Premier League and other clubs, like you say, other big European names. And it would be no surprise, again, if they were sort of doing the rounds, those names, for obvious reasons at the same time. And I suppose the one thing I did want to ask you about, because Portuguese football, like you say, is that feeder into one of the bigger leagues, as it says. Portuguese football is still a massive league, but it's naturally, say, the financial model. Yeah. I know those two, we mentioned Jokeres. Is there anyone else you think will be sort of Premier League clubs looking at specifically this summer and thinking that's one we'll make a move for?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. First of all, Jokeres. I think Jokeres he's just been absolutely incredible. I see you've got Darwin Nunez scarf up there.
Yeah.
See? And he's, I mean, in comparison, Jokeres has got 36 goals and I think 14 assists already this season. There's about 10 matches left. Wow. You know, Nunez's best season, I think he got 33. So, you know, that just shows you it's almost like a cheat code. It's almost like playing with two players with him. He's just incredible. As apart from his goals and his assists, he's just incredible energy. You know, he's just never stops. Sporting have had a really good season. They've been winning games like 3-0 and 4-0. And even when that's the case and you're going into stoppage time, Jokeres is there, you know, scampering down, chasing down the defenders, running back, helping the defence. It's just like almost, you know, it's just an incredible player. One of the best players in Portugal, without a doubt, over the last 20 years or so. There's no doubt that he's going to be sold for huge money. It would be amazing if Sporting managed to keep him for one season. Most people think it's impossible. Maybe if Sporting do win the league and they end up in a Champions League, that may be the only thing which, from his point of view, you know, maybe he would think, you know, it'd be good for him to play in the Champions League for one season and then make the move. But, you know, that's probably wishful thinking on my part. I think he's just such a good player. Too good, really, for the Portuguese league. So, yeah, here's the obvious one. Another one, which, of course, you may have heard lots of people are talking about, is the Benfica midfielder, João Neves. Again, really impressive player. 19 years old. You know, Benfica have had this fantastic conveyor belt of young talent over the last few years, and he's kind of the next one coming off it. And again, what's impressed people about him, like I say, 19 years old, he's basically been carrying that Benfica side. He's been their best player all season. You know, they've had, like I said, a bit of an up and down season, haven't really impressed too much, but he's always the one, you know, kind of, you know, getting a team going, getting them out of holes, you know, scoring some important goals, and so consistent is amazing. He doesn't really catch the eye that much, but it's just everything he does perfectly. I'd compare him a little bit to João Moutinho, of course, who you'll know about at Wolves. So just imagine him, but much more dynamic, obviously much younger. Moutinho, when he went to England, he was really kind of in the twilight of his career. But João Neves is, you know, just at the start of his career and just really good head on his shoulders as well. Whenever he's interviewed, you know, he just doesn't look like a 19-year-old kid. He doesn't sound like a 19-year-old kid. He just sounds like a veteran, you know, just and taking on all this responsibility at Benfica and really thriving with it. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of talk here that he's on the list for Manchester United. I don't know whether that's true or not. But, I think he'll do really well. So, yeah, there are a couple of players who I think will do really good. This Sporting side, it's a bit worrying in some ways because they've got about four or five players who are just, I think, will definitely be in the big league soon. But obviously, they won't sell them all they try not to sell them all too quickly. But the one I mentioned just a while ago, Morten Hulmand as well, who's the Danish central midfielder. Again, really, really good player. And I think he'd thrive in the Premier League because he's really physical. He's, you know, again, really good positionally, but also very good technically. Moves the ball so fast, you know, he just wins the ball, moves it on so fast, always makes the correct decision. So, yeah, there's a few. I'd say that all of those are kind of destined for the bigger leagues. Maybe not in the case of Sporting, you know, you've got Inacio Diamandi, Jokeres, and Hulmand. And I don't think they definitely won't all be sold, but maybe in the next two or three years, I'd expect probably all of them to be in England or you know, Spain or Italy.
Interesting. Yeah. With Amorim as well, like say he's developed those players, he's worked within this structure, he's used to doing this. He's very much a big part of Portuguese football culture as well, like a big prominent figure. I suppose the final question I wanted to ask you, and you can be honest with this, is there talk in Portugal that he could be one to go to. And it might not just be Liverpool, but step up to a massive European sort of giant, something along those lines.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. Amorim is, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword in Portugal, because Portugal is a football-mad country. And, of course, it's very frustrating for the fans and when the best players get sold and the best managers leave. But it's not really seen as, you know, people don't really get angry about it, because it's kind of natural. It's just, there's, you know, you just look at the disparity in the financial, you know, the financial side of things for a start. I think I remember reading when Nani left Sporting to go to Manchester United, I think he increased his wages 17-fold or something. he was just still a youth player and on, you know, relatively low wages at Sporting. Then he went to Manchester United. But, you know, how can you compete with that? You can't. And then even just from the players and the coaches themselves, their point of view, of course, they want to play in the best leagues. They want to play in the leagues which are most watched around the world, and people understand that. So as a kind of, you know, obviously people are frustrated about it, but there's a kind of inevitability about it. And I'd even say there's a pride, you know, in this, you know, saying that Portugal, look at it, you know, we haven't got the money or the bigger leagues, but look, we're producing all these players and managers who are going there. And then, of course, not just going there and making up the numbers, going there and got players like Bernardo Silva and Ruben, Ruben Dias at City, Bruno Fernandes at United, your own Diogo Jota. Of course, these are players who are big players who are having a big impact. And so that does give people a sense of pride. And yeah, it's been very widely reported that Ruben Amorim is very high on the list of Liverpool. I think most people would not be surprised at all. I'd say they would be surprised if Amorim is still here, maybe in a couple of years.
Yeah, very much so. It is a CV, and he's doing a great job. And Liverpool fans, we will have to see if he's the one. But all that really leaves me to say is, Tom, for the insight into Amorim, Portuguese football, everything related to that, it is much appreciated. So thank you very much for your time.
No worries, Dave. Good talking to you.
Thank you. And ladies and gents, that was an Anfield Index special on Ruben Amorim.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.